Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes!
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing high.
All right, welcome on in. It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. If you're looking for the yo, it is a seltzerless podcast. But as always, the High Hopes Podcast is presented by Miller Lite. Jack Fritz, along with my guy, Tucker Bagley. Tucker, what's going on, pal?
I'm just excited that there are no more West Coast games on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you. This week, though, was kind of neat. It was kind of nice because I could get the boys down. Walker had been napping during the day, so he's been up till like 9:30, like a crazy man. So he's able to go to sleep, then I'm going to lock in for first pitch. Now, on the contrary, I've had to go to bed in like the seventh inning because I haven't made it through, and then we watch it in the morning. So I feel you, but I will say it wasn't the worst timing for a nice little West Coast trip for my Phil's viewing pleasure. But for normal human beings, normal functioning human beings, I'm sure they agree with your sentiment, Tucker.
Yeah, Saturday I was excited. I fell asleep in the eighth, and my wife woke me up, and I was like, that's all right, they won. And just kidding, it was 1-1 going into extra. So I got to watch the rest of that. But yeah, I mean, the Phillies seem to enjoy the West Coast. They seem to have a lot of success and enjoy the late starts.
Well, it's certainly a change from how it used to be. I mean, I think we used to dread the West Coast trips, and they actually just went out. And besides the first two games of the Mariner series, which were tough, the first game you excused away. The second one was, I don't know, like they just won nine in a row. Are they able to come back down to earth? They rebounded on that Wednesday. But, you know, I thought it was a really impressive, gut check type of road trip. And they went into Arizona, a place that has been a bit of a house of horrors for this team. And they didn't, like, take it to them. You know, game two they did. But going down there and taking 2 of 3 and, you know, Cattell's back in the lineup and whatever hat he was wearing about, you know, the burning of bridges. And whatnot, and then Torrey Lovello. That's a team that's still fighting for their playoff lives. I don't think they're that good, but they're not like some pushover. And for the most part, I think the Phillies went in there and they outplayed the D-backs. And yesterday was classic getaway day type energy from this team, but easily could have gone out there and swept a pretty desperate Diamondbacks team.
Yeah, and you kind of look at the way they've separated themselves now from the rest of the pack. And obviously you have a tough week coming up with the Braves. You have some games against the Brewers and Rays at the end of the season. But for a team that maybe 2 weeks ago we were talking about them being with the Diamondbacks and the Padres kind of competing for the very back of the wild card picture, now you're ahead of the Cubs. Not only do you have the number one spot in the wild card, but you've created a lot of separation where if you do have an off week coming up this month, you still have that cushion to play with, which really, for the first time, maybe all season, they finally have some cushion and can breathe a little bit in a playoff spot.
Yeah, and that's what made yesterday kind of suck a little bit was, you know, you had a chance to win that game. It's 0-0. You lose 1-0. And the Cubs are facing Mizorowski, and it ended up being a higher scoring game. But the Cubs lose, and you could have gotten 2-game cushion. You still have only 1-game cushion. I would love to have home field over the Cubs. Wrigley, you know, this team going into Wrigley and trying to win a postseason series seems like a bit of a daunting task. I like the way that they're playing, obviously, but still would like home field advantage for that series for sure. And who knows, like whatever the Cubs, you know, maybe have going on at home. Bregman's on the team now, so you can never be too sure about what operations. I mean, all of a sudden PCA might be a 40-40 guy. It might be time to investigate the Cubs.
I was shocked when I saw he had 37 home runs last week.
38 now. 38. It's crazy. He's unbelievable. But investigate the Cubs. Nevertheless, we need that to be a home series. So, you know, we'll obviously get into the specifics of this series But the thing that I wanted to kind of throw out at the beginning, because really having a tough time, I'm really wrestling with this one, Tucker, because you know me. Like, I'm always a, I want a dream guy. Like, I want a dream on this team.
Oh, yeah.
Are you allowing yourself to dream? Are you allowing yourself to believe that this team is different? There's been a lot of talk of, like, I don't know, kind of feels like the year. I did tweet yesterday. We're monitoring the situation on if this is the year or not. Are you allowing yourself to dream, or are you taking this day by day?
I think I am allowing myself to dream, because I do think this team is different. And not so much, and this is a team of destiny, and I can't believe, you know, how they pull off some of these wins. But you think about some of the things that have hamstrung this team in the postseason in the past, and they have different needs than they have before. Like, their bullpen isn't as good as it has been in years past. But I really like that they actually have bench guys now. They have some depth in their lineup where, if, you know, a guy goes cold and you need to swap out somebody, you know, I'm curious to see what Justin Crawford does in the postseason in his first time. I mean, we're only a few years removed from Johan Rojas hitting .315 in the regular season and then going over, you know, in the playoffs. And I don't think Justin Crawford is going to do that. I appreciate his approach a lot more than Rojas. But, you know, if he struggles, you have a guy in Derek Hill who can go out there and play center field. Brandon Marsh has been maybe one of the worst outfielders in baseball in the second half. Like, you have someone in Brian De La Cruz who can go up and play, especially if you have to go against a tough lefty. So offensively, I think they have more depth than they've really ever had in this run. They don't have the top end guys. They don't have multiple. I mean, Bryce has been amazing. Schwarber's kind of done, you know, he's been all right in the second half. He hasn't been as great as he was in the first half. But I look at the depth in this lineup and the depth in the rotation now that both Painter and Nola seem to have got going. And those are two things that I think they've really struggled with in recent playoff runs that could really help carry them in days where, hey, if Bryce goes 0-for-4, like, they have a shot because someone else might get him up and get a big hit.
I want the record to show that I believe you said Mabley before talking about Brandon Marsh. That
I did. Yep.
I was like, did you just say?
Maybe it's Mabley.
Maybe. Should I be the title of the pod? Mabley, this is the year.
So, are you dreaming? Mabley.
Mabley. I have no idea. Mabley I am. Mabley I'm not. I will say, I did say off the air to you and Salty the other day that I don't feel as dumb as I felt with the other kids, you know, from everything going on. I've reached that point now where I just feel so stupid. Just so stupid. I'm not that I've ever, like, you know, exuded the idea that there's much going on in this brain besides Phil's baseball. But I feel like it's gotten to a point now where if you just look me in the eyes, there's nothing going on. There's just lights on, no one's home. So maybe we're going to make it. Maybe we won't. I'm really trying to take this day by day with this team. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but everything that you just laid out is pretty much where I'm at. I mean, you look at what the starting staff has done. We've talked about the offense and what they've been doing since Arise's addition, and we probably need to start having a conversation about Luis Arise. We'll get to that a little bit later. But you look at, all of a sudden, with what Painter's doing, what Nola, both were brilliant out in Arizona. Lizardo, you can make the case, has been the best starter on the staff for a majority of the season. And then, you know, I think the Sanchez and Wheeler. I mean, Sanchez, it's so funny. We've been talking the podcast like Sanchez has been some scrub. And then you look up in August and he had a 1.75 ERA, I think, or like 1.4 is like the second best in the National League. But his highs are just so high that any little thing, you're like, oh, I don't know. Is this, like, this weird falls apart? So, but you look at that, and I mean, every single turn of the rotation now, you have a chance for one of these guys to go out there and fire six shutouts, six one run, seven one run, two run. I mean, the starting staff is on such a roll right now that, and the nice part about it is that, you know, in the postseason, you do feel like you're a bit of an arm short out there. The McFarland development is just phenomenal. I can't wait to talk about him. But all of a sudden, if you have Painter who can now maybe go to the bullpen, you can get a little bit creative with Nola, because you don't feel like he's going to go out there and like crap down his leg. It was so funny. I was watching Nola the other night, and it almost got back to the old Nola feeling where you're just like, I just trust Aaron Nola.
He's got it again. I don't know what it is, but he just has it again. Like, he looks like himself again.
Yeah, like, I just was watching him, and it almost erased the last year and a half of watching Aaron Nola, because it was just, he's going out there and doing his job, and he's got some life on the pitches again, and he's got command of both sides of the plate. It's been a revelation. So I'm really trying to take it one day at a time, but you look at what they're doing, you look at what the offense is doing. I wonder if there's going to be, like, they probably won't because they're winning. I don't even know what it would be lineup structure wise, just because you look at what's going on right now, and it's Schwarber's hit and miss. Turner is a zero.
Disaster.
Harper's, it feels like every time Harper bats in the first inning, it's a two outs and no one on. And it's just like,
and they'll just walk him.
Here's Bryce, and there's the walk. And
it's a great bit for his on base streak. Like, just a walk with two outs in the first inning and keep it moving.
Exactly, dude. He's just like, all right, let's get. And he is, I appreciate Bryce to the standpoint of, like, he's now gunning for the on base streak. He bunted the other night and he got the first base, and I don't know if I've ever seen him so fired up in my life. Is him celebrating the drag bunt that he's able to pull off.
It was a gorgeous bunt.
It was. Now, I will say this, and I want to put this out into the podcast universe. He's going to do it at a bad time in a postseason series. I'm just letting everyone know. And we're all going to be like, what is he doing? It's like, remember when Schwarber bunted in, what was that,
game six of the World Series?
I think he was on Part of My Take talking about that.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's walking back to the dugout like, you idiot. What are you just bunting for? It was that bunt and the Stott bunt, the two most notable postseason.
A lot of notable bunts in Philly's history.
Yeah, so like, what the hell are you guys doing? So but yeah, man, it's a really exciting time with the way they're playing and the way they stabilized. And I don't appreciate the national media doing the whole, hey, if there's one team that can take down the Dodgers, it's the Phillies thing, because the starting staff. Yeah, I really just have so much emotional scarring from that. But, man, they're in a damn good spot, Tucker.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I went to Niagara Falls last week, and I was listening to the Phillies on XM, and you have to listen on the home broadcast. Though WIP now on XM, so you can listen to it there. But you had to listen to the home broadcast, so I had to listen to the Mariners broadcast that I was driving. And it's so funny listening to how opposing broadcasters talk about the Phillies, where, you know, when you're here and you live it every day and you live the roller coaster and the ups and downs, and man, Trey Turner's having a rough year. Alec Bohm's kind of turned things around. Listening to them talk about, man, they had a really rough stretch, but they've been amazing. And Don Mattingly has been great. And can you believe how exciting Trey Turner is when he gets on base? Like, I don't know if we become more negative because we do experience all the lows and we just don't look at the box score every night, or just don't look at the record and see that they're 18 games over 500. But I felt that way kind of all year, that the national media and just kind of the outlook on this team from the outside looking in has been a lot higher than maybe what we've felt personally.
Yeah. So since April 26th, I think it is around that time, whatever, they do have a better record than the Braves. And now they had the bad July. I think that threw people kind of off the scent a little bit, but man, like, they just, they've gotten right back to where I think that we thought they were going to be. I remember I felt this way last year too, though, you know, when Bader got here, and who knows how that series goes if Bader doesn't get hurt and Wheeler gets going. But I guess it's just kind of that time of the year where you're like, maybe this is it. Like,
they're just always really good in August. I don't know why. Like, you and James mentioned it on the last pod. Like, I felt this way at the end of August last year with Bader and how well him and Duran kind of really shored up everything in the outfield and in the bullpen. Felt that way in 23 with the Trey Turner ovation. They hit like 59 home runs that month and set a franchise record. And then you have this month where it was just like, they're just going to win no matter what. And they had a kind of rough start at one point. They did lose, I think, like 4 or 5 to start the month. And then they ripped off 9 in a row, lost 2, ripped off 5 in a row. Like, the fact that they're able to keep coming back after these setbacks, I think is a huge thing too for a team that I think in the last few postseasons, when they've gone down, they haven't necessarily been able to fight back out of a hole.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing that's happened with them is that the in-game resiliency feels like it's been built up a little bit. I always give them credit for, I think over a season, they can climb their way out of it. But there is this feeling of, well, we're not going to just let this game go awry. And yesterday, I kind of feel like they're about to have a little bit of a moment, a little bit. And then, you know, we couldn't, our cleanup hitter, who is a bat-to-ball artist and loves hitting with two strikes and can put the ball all over the field, except for some reason recently, he's just eyeing up the shortstop and cannot wait to hit a grounder right at him.
I think he's been doing too much with Bohm.
I think he's been infected. I do. I think Arraez has been infected a little bit with a little bit of Bohmitis. And it is nice seeing old 6'4" getting back to his ways. I was getting a little bit sick and tired of having to praise Bohmer. Seeing him get a little bit of jam shots this week has been refreshing, to say the least. But
leads the NL in double plays now, by the way.
Ah, nice. We're back. But there is this in-game resiliency that I think they're building up. And when you have a comeback like they had against the Cardinals, and it doesn't matter who the opponent is, I think teams can trick themselves into believing in anything, especially athletes. And as you build it up over time, you have these comebacks, you start to have a little bit of belief. And, you know, yesterday could have been one of those moments if you maybe let Derek Hill steal a base rather than swinging first pitch. But nevertheless, they were going to lose a baseball game. So it is what it is. All right, so this series, a couple things that I thought that stuck out that I want to talk about. We mentioned the starting staff. Nola, we feel good about where he's at. Lizardo has been, I love Jesus Lizardo. And Tucker, it almost doesn't get talked about enough that we always do the Dombrowski thing. He got an ace level pitcher who, by the way, he signed to a contract this offseason for $5,135, if he hits the open market this offseason, $250, he would hit the market at 29, I believe. So Dylan Cease, who had not had a season the way that Lizardo had last year and now this year, until this year where he's probably going to finish second in the AL Cy Young, he got 7 years, $210, and he was in his 30s, I believe. So him, I mean, Dombrowski and the whole Lizardo situation and locking him down and even trading for him, Starlin Cabo and Marion Boyd for a guy that has turned into an ace level starter for you. We talked about when they got him, the idea of this could be Wheeler all over again. And he hasn't been Wheeler, but he has turned into, he's a top 10 pitcher in baseball. And it feels like it's always, well, Sanchez and Wheeler. I totally agree. And then it's like, oh yeah, and Lizardo. Like, Lizardo is a top 10 starting pitcher in baseball. They should have, realistically, three, as long as Wheeler is Wheeler. It's crazy. And, the Zeus trade is an all-timer. I mean, maybe the best trade for a lefty starter in Phillies history. Just kidding.
Rick Wise for Steve Carlton.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, it is crazy. And not only, how great he's been his 2 years here, but think about how quickly he turned his season around. Right. Like, I think through his first 8 starts, he had an ERA close to 6. He kind of looked like the guy we saw in the middle of the year last year, where he just had a month where he was tipping pitches and everyone was hitting everything he threw. His last 20 starts, the Phillies are 17-3. He's got an ERA of 2.07. I mean, he's outside of Mizorowski, he's been the best pitcher in baseball for the last 3 months.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's just rolling right along, just doing his Lizardo thing and not being talked about as one of the better pitchers.
No, he's not a headline guy. Like, you forget that he's in the rotation sometimes.
Sometimes. And you're like, oh, Zeus tonight. Perfect. And then he just goes out there, rolls, and does his thing, strikes out a million guys. And man, the sweeper's been a total equalizer for him. Caleb Cotham, the thing that he believes the most in is a nice little sweeper, teaches all these guys a sweeper. Painter's sweeper has been great. His sweeper has been great. I think that slowly but surely they're turning into a bit of a change-up organization as well. You know, Lizardo's totally changed his change-up, and it's been a plus pitch for him. Sanchez didn't always have this change-up. And then you get to Painter, and for as much as we talk about the fastball, talk about fixing that, and I totally agree, they had to. And his stuff was down a little bit yesterday, but he obviously was great. The change has been a total game changer for him as well. A 0.77 batting average against since Painter came back with that changeup. It's crazy. And a near 20% whiff rate. And you know what I love the most about it? Because I never understood why it was a thing. But I love the right-on-right changeup. I like a left on left hand changeup when the timing's right for it, but a right on right changeup, it basically moves like a splitter used to.
Yeah.
Except it's a more of a circle changeup grip to it. He ditched the splitter. I mean, Painter was really, really good yesterday.
He was awesome, and he's been awesome since he's come back. And if you're Caleb Cotham, if you're the Phillies pitching development staff, I mean, you deserve a huge pat on the back for what this kid has been able to turn around so quickly, because he looked lost when they sent him down a couple months ago, and he's had some issues. He, for some reason, can't get the first two batters out to start the game. If he does that, like, he just might throw a no-hitter. I was watching the game with Spike and Ike yesterday, and when he got out of the first inning, I was like, he just might throw seven shutout now, because he won't give up another base runner. I think he only gave up one more hit after that. But yeah, what he's done and his ability to kind of reinvent himself on the fly and adjust his pitch mix over the last 2 or 3 months gives the Phillies another weapon going into the postseason. Like, when we talk about this pitching staff and this bullpen and how, you know, shallow it may be, it's really good to have five starters right now who you could probably mix and match and piggyback and do creative things. Now, it remains to be seen if Don Mattingly's the guy to be pushing those buttons, but it's really good to have another arm. And when you talk about, you know, Nola aging and Wheeler aging, we had Painter, you know, kind of penciled in at the top of this rotation for 2, 3, 4 years down the line. He looks like that guy again.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies have to be thrilled. And I think the one guy, like, you start dreaming on Painter now rather than just hoping he was going to figure it out. You can start dreaming on, okay, now he's going to have an entire offseason to really hone in on what he's developed this year. So, and he's another year removed from TJ, so he's going to should be even stronger. He has surpassed his, the one thing I do want to monitor with him is that he has surpassed his innings from last year now. So he's in like the 120s or 130s in innings pitched this year combined.
He's at 105 with the Phillies, but he obviously threw a few starts in AAA.
Yeah, I think it was 26 at AAA. So he's around like the 130 mark. Last year, I think he threw in the 120s. So I hope that yesterday was not, you know, the fatigue starting to wear in a little bit, and that's why you saw some of the stuff go down. But yeah, he's pitching with a ton of confidence. I don't know why he throws 95 in the first, and then, I mean, maybe it's the old Verlander thing where Verlander used to come out throwing 95 and then would ramp it up as the start goes. Hey, maybe he's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. You know, maybe he's being a pure starting pitcher. Back in the day, back when we were learning the game,
back when the expectation was you go seven innings.
Yes, yes. Game changed, Tom. Every time, every game, every game. But like, you know, it used to be you come out, you establish your fastball, you leave some in the tank for later in the game. And maybe Painter's just a throwback where he's like, first hit, perfect. Here's 94 down the middle, grooved for you. I'm not going to throw any of my off speed. And then you'll look up in the seventh inning and Painter's still out there kind of doing his thing. So, and the thing that was awesome and awesome and great about yesterday I feel like the only ball that was really hit hard was that one that went off Stott's glove that Stott probably should have caught. It wasn't like, sometimes the Painter, there's a lot of hard contact, but really since he's come back, it hasn't been that way. I think his barrel rate since he's gotten back is like 3.8, and when he got sent down, the barrel rate against him was 9 something.
Yeah.
So it felt like he was addicted to finding barrels before he got sent down. And since he's come back, he's limited damage much better. But it wasn't like they were hitting rockets right at people. He was in complete and total control of that game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy who early on in the season, like, you were praying that when they hit the ball, it was right at somebody because they were hitting it hard. But he's missing a lot of bats, too. Like, his swing and miss stuff, his whiff rate is way up. His strikeout numbers haven't been super high, which I think is kind of interesting. Like, he's still around, like, 7 K per 9 this year. And even yesterday, he had 6 and 7 innings. So I do wonder if that's just more of an approach thing and he'll kind of figure it out, because the underlying numbers of him missing bats are there. But yeah, I mean, just the way he looks is completely different from what we saw 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's not even close. And I think I would rather him learn how to be efficient in the strike zone and pitch than hunt strikeouts. I think that's been the biggest thing with Lizardo, is that they have they've got him in the zone rather than just hunting K's. And, you know, Lizardo at times when he feels like he's out of the zone, I think he'll like dial it back on the fastball, start throwing 94, 95, find the feel again, and then start ramping it back up. But those guys, I've said it before on this podcast, like those guys remind me a lot of each other. Like they use all of their other stuff and then use their fastball to hunt strikeouts or like a change of pace type pitch. Like they have very, very similar styles right now. All right, some other things. Alex McFarland's a revelation. Like, you want to talk about changing the equation when it comes to this team in October? Just having that guy be able to come into a game in the sixth or seventh inning at this point, and maybe as things go further, he could turn into a maybe even an eighth inning guy. I think Boland's fine. The home run yesterday was annoying, but I know he's been a little shaky recently, but I also think he's pitching a lot more. So that's something they're probably going to have to manage a little bit. I overall think he's okay. But McFarland, I mean, that NOLA inning, that felt like the moment where the Phillies, the fans, everyone else was just like, oh, he's got something. Like, he's shown glimpses, he's shown flashes, but we've been waiting for him in a leveraged spot. And just coming into that situation, just getting out of it without it completely falling apart. I mean, this is why he had to be at Reading until mid-July. All those high leverage late inning spots got him ready for these moments.
I mean, he looks like the next evolution of the relief pitcher. Like, just the stuff he has, it looks like he's throwing a wiffle ball and it just happens to be 102 and moves as much as it does. But yeah, I do like the confidence he kind of carries himself with on the mound. Like, he's built and kind of acts like a big game reliever, unlike, you know, some other people in that bullpen.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And old Kirky, he tried. That's another thing I wanted to bring up is that we're always monitoring a lot of situations on this podcast. And obviously we've talked a lot about old Donnie Baseball's bullpen management. Pretty shaky sometimes. But I thought this series, we might have seen him start understanding leverage just a little bit. Just a little bit. Kirkering was struggling. He had Raley up and ready to go against the lefty. You know?
Do you think Weird Raley's only pitched one inning in the last 2 weeks?
Well, like, it's one total, right? Because he's finished.
He has three. He has three appearances with one out.
Nice, nice, nice. So, you know, a little bit there. He had Bolin ready to go in the Lizardo inning versus Perdomo. So, listen, our guy might be starting to figure out what leverage situations are. By the way, speaking of bad bunts that we talked about earlier, the Perdomo bunt yesterday, one of the worst bunts I've ever seen, just in time and place. Runner on second base, you're the four hitter. what are you bunting for?
Yeah, I was driving home at that point, and Scott on the radio was incredulous. He couldn't believe that the cleanup hitter would bunt in that situation. Like, you're a 100 RBI guy, and not only did you choose to bunt, it may have been the worst bunt ever. You just bunted it right back to the pitcher.
I know. It reminded me of what was NLDS game 4 against the Braves in 22, I think it was 22 or 23, but Strom was in and the guy bunted, and it was, everyone in the building was like, well, thanks. Like, appreciate it. You gave us a free out.
Thank you so much. We will take it.
We will take it. So we're monitoring the Mattingly understanding leverage thing. McFarland just been a total revelation and really changes the equation for this pen. And maybe, just maybe, he could take down the Bolin inning. But I think Bolin's fine. He just pitched a lot recently. They've relied upon him and probably needs a little bit of a breather. Bryce on this road trip at 485 with an OPS over 1200. He has been unbelievable, you know, since they got a rise. I do think he's starting to a little bit get back to the, I'm not going to just take my walks. I know he did in the ninth yesterday, but I could see him this series being a little bit less lucky and more, I'm going to go out there and try to hit kind of guy. But he has been on an absolute tear. And like, if you take out that July, and he can't take out that July, but if he has a normal Bryce month, he's already top 4 in WOBA. He's top 10 in all like the important hitting stats. He's had an elite year that I feel like has not been talked about enough, because people were so set that he was done, and he is answering the bell this year.
And he's also been like really streaky. Like when he's gone bad and gone cold, like he's gone really bad and cold. Like he's had a few, you know, 0-15, 0-20 stretches. But I do wonder, like he's up to 100 walks. He said at the beginning of the year he wanted 125. So getting close to that number, like he's got an outside shot at his 125 goal. But I mean, when we talk about how much he maybe enjoys hitting in front of a rise, does that change the price you would pay to keep Luis Arraez in the offseason?
I don't know about Arraez right now. I don't know. I need him to have a hot streak. I need something. It's been a little bit of a lot of just not well-struck baseballs recently.
Can you see why he's been on so many teams now?
Well, I think everyone's starting to see the warts of Luis Arraez, where, yes, he puts the bat on the baseball. That's about it. That's really just about it. I mean, how many times can we do the, oh, it's just so amazing he doesn't strike out. Well, it doesn't also come with like that much. It comes with a ball that you just hope can sneak over the shortstop's head or sneak through one of the holes in the infield rather than let's rip a double into the gap. Again, he's fine. I don't want to judge him too bad off of a down stretch in his time here. When he first got here, it was great. And I hope he can get back to that. Right now, it does not change my equation, Tucker, on if I would bring him back. I would try to find someone maybe with a little bit more thump if they can. But I also want him to – I also don't want to write him off completely because I do think he's a talented hitter. But you are certainly starting to see the warts of Luis Arraez.
Yeah, I mean, I said it when he went through his first cold streak. Like, if these bloopers that he hits aren't falling in, it's a brutal watch. And you saw it in the ninth inning last night, right? Like when he goes up and just hits that ground ball first pitch. I mean, he's hitting 280, which isn't terrible for him. It is because he was hitting like 315 when he got here. So on base percentage here is like 295, which isn't great. Like, I think Trey Turner is the only one in the starting lineup with a lower OBP than him right now, who's also hitting at the top of the lineup. But yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly flawed player, and I think we've kind of seen that play out over his first month here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a little bit frustrating. It's been a little bit frustrating, and I really hope he turns it around because I do like the idea of him, and I hope in the postseason it can change the equation there. Current Arraez is a bit much, but hey, he's certainly helped out Harper, and Harper feels comfortable with him hitting behind him. And if it gets this version of Harper, then I mean, I'll give Luis Arraez $100 million for whatever it takes to get Bryce to be Bryce again. I will take it. And I also don't understand. I know this is going to sound a little boomery. Like, how do you go through these times with Bryce, and you see him consciously thinking about the opposite way, and it's like, why don't you just do that all the time? Just always think, go the opposite way. And when he's going the opposite way, he is one of the best hitters in baseball. I just do it. Like, just do the opposite way field thing.
The funny thing about Bryce is he doesn't do anything subtle, like at all.
No.
Like, you can always tell what he's thinking or what he's trying to do every time he comes up to the plate. It's fascinating for someone that great and that big of a superstar, how much he tinkers with things and just how demonstrative he is with everything he does.
Yeah, and I think as long as he's hot, he's going to wear the camo every single night. The camo seems like it's here to stay. The bright orange, he's fully.
He sometimes wears the SEPTA arm sleeve.
Oh, yes, the SEPTA arm
sleeve. You got to pay tribute to the Market Frankford line, his favorite.
Yes, everyone talks about the staples of this city, you know, cheesesteaks and SEPTA. That's what Philadelphia is.
Our favorites.
We're so big into public transportation. It's our favorite thing in the entire world. But yeah, the Bryce thing, I'm very, very happy. And I need him to have a postseason moment again. I need him to get back in the good graces of the city and everyone just understand that we're watching one of the best players, or at least, you know, best players of his generation and going to be a Hall of Famer. Because he's been pretty ridiculous. And we don't need to do the elite, not elite thing. This year, he has been an elite hitter. He's going to end the year with 30 plus home runs, may drive in 100. He's 20 RBI short, Tucker, I think. So
he's at 80 right now.
20 RBI short. I think, yeah, you said 125. I like said 140 was his goal. But regardless, like, gonna walk a ton. And And we need that big postseason series to get back in the good graces of the city and then have people being pro Bryce again. All right. So before we get to Tucker's bag here, huge series this weekend. I mean, just now it's a four gamer. We got the wraparound with the Monday Labor Day, which is nice. Hey, they're playing on a holiday. Crazy concept.
In a day game on a holiday, which I appreciate.
Well, gee, Willikers, if only there was a couple days during the summer where every team should be playing because everyone's off of work. Good for the Phillies and Major League Baseball. They're playing on a holiday. So the matchups this weekend, you got Sale Sanchez on Friday and tomorrow night, which is going to be awesome. Martin Perez has actually been pretty good for them. He's going against Wheeler. Huge Wheeler spot from the standpoint of judging whether or not that he is back. And if he shuts down the Braves, which he feels like he always levels up a little bit against the Braves because they he feels like, you know, he's a Braves fan growing up, but Perez versus him. Tyler Mahle, who annoyingly shut this team down early in the season before they changed their approach and everything's back, versus Knowles. Again, a good spot to see how back Nola is. And then Bryce Elder, who, thank God, has climbed back to earth a little bit. His ERA is now over 4 after he was like leading the majors in the ERA the first 2 months of the year. Bryce Elder versus Zeus on Monday. So you feel good about having those four going in a series, and they're what, 3 games back of the Braves? 3.5?
I think they're 4 games back after yesterday.
4 games back of the Braves. I should have looked that up for the podcast. Totally unprofessional by me. But a real kind of make or break from the standpoint of making the postseason. But I think it's one of those series where it's a gut check and the fan base is going to be absurdly locked in on it. And if they go out and take 3 of 4, I think that Tuesday morning, there is a feeling of we can do it. I think that this is the series that I think people have been waiting for. They've got off the West Coast trip, which not everyone is totally locked in on. And if they go out and take care of business against the Braves, I think that this is a real wind at the back of their sails and let's go win the entire thing.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a real measuring stick series for this team. And it's a team that, you know, you possibly, if you want to get to the World Series, you're going to have to maybe go through the Braves in the National League playoffs. And this is a team that really kind of shut you down when you played them earlier in the season. Like, one of the reasons why you kind of struggled early on is because you played them, you're 1-5 against them. Obviously, there was a different team back then. You had a different manager, you had a completely different approach. But you kind of look at what they've done, and you know, you could say that they've beat up on you know, some pretty bad teams or mediocre teams. I mean, the Braves are about as good as it gets in the National League. So if you win 3 of 4, if you put yourself right back in the division race with, you know, 3 weeks to go, I think everyone's going to be really excited. I think it's going to really energize the fan base. And I think even if you don't reach, you know, the top of the NL East and you still finish second, probably put a little scare into the Braves, who probably thought after April, we don't really have to worry about this team.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm mostly okay not winning the division. Now, at the same time, like, it would be cool. Winning 3 straight would be good. I for the first time, actually want them to play.
Do you want them to play in the wild card? Because I really want them to play in the wild card.
I want them to play in the wild card. It may sound dumb, but they've had their best success by playing in the wild card. And it doesn't always mean, you know, the past doesn't always guarantee future results, but I think this team struggles with that week off, and I want them being as locked in as they can be. I want the wild card series. Give it to me.
Yeah, me too. And I guess you could get there if you were the third division winner, but yes. I'd much rather, yeah, just I would. Would you give up the division? Would you say I'll take the top wild card, have the Cubs come here for 3 games?
Yeah. I still can't get a feel on that Cubs team. Like, Bregman's super hot right now. Obviously, PCA is PCA. He's going to MVP. I don't trust that starting staff that
much. And, yeah, in a shorter series, I almost...
Jacob Webb got hurt last night. It was one of their better relievers recently. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a shorter series, I would almost rather play the Cubs than the Diamondbacks or Padres.
Man, I would like to face that D-backs team in the postseason. I think they are pretty hot garbage, to be honest with you. All right, Tucker, before we wrap things up, what do you got in your bag?
I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Brandon Marsh, second half of the season, he's got a 510 OPS, just third worst in the National League, worst among all All-Stars. I think Ernie Clement's like 587. It's the other one that's really struggled. It's kind of flown under the radar because the team has been so good in August, but kind of reaching a breaking point where he's just been an automatic out now for 2 months. And I know he does this every year, but it's been pretty awful. And I don't think anyone's really talking about it.
Yeah. So I looked it up the other day. I think he has like one extra base hit in his lap, like of his hits. I think it was one, and it was like a long enough time ago.
He has 2 home runs since July 1st.
Yeah. Well, that checks out. I mean, him and Turner right now, I feel like the two biggest like sticking points in the lineup. Schwarber has not been great at all, but he has his moments where you're like, oh, there's Schwarber. He's fine. Well, not fine, but he feels more strikeout-y this year in big moments. I know he had the home run, but he certainly has not had as good of a year as last year. I don't care that he's leading Major League Baseball in home runs with 40. He's slowed down from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then Arraez is one as well, but I think you trust the track records with those two.
Yeah.
Turner, you should probably trust track record, but it's just been so eh. Marsh is the one where you're like, no. Now, at least Brian De La Cruz has been very, very, very good and has been playing against lefties. We know that, but I don't think they would start cutting into his playing time against righties. I don't think they would do that with Marsh, but at least Brian De La Cruz has certainly been viable and a real option for them.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm more optimistic about this team in the postseason is because you have the depth. Like, you have someone who you could put out there who's got any big hits. Mentioned Turner. I looked it up, too, because he was also awful in the month of August. So he's 11 months in his career over, I don't forget how many years he's played, 10, 11. 11 months in his career, he has an OPS under 710. 4 of them are this year.
Wow.
Which is kind of worrisome.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it checks out. I mean, he's had like 2 spurts this year where he had a two-week stretch where he hit 350 and was like that raised his average a little bit. And then he was out that series out in San Diego where he hit the back-to-back games with home runs. And that's really been it. I mean, he did drive in a run in this series, which was good late, but it was still like a little nonsense bleeder to the right side that barely squeaked through. It wasn't the most ethical base hit, I would say. It was a pretty unethical hit with runners in scoring position by old Trey.
This is the first Phillies team with a 20-win month and a month with less than 10 wins since 1995.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that is pretty crazy. There's some stat yesterday that is starting to have me. I forget exactly what it was, but this is the first time that a team has done what the Phillies have done this year since the 19 Nationals. So that gave me a little bit of...
Yeah, I mean, that's like your classic worst to first kind of team.
Yeah. Well, they were even... I think they were 48-63 at one point, that Nationals team. Or maybe it's 31-44. But that's the one that you're looking at of is this team that? Even the Braves in 21. I mean, the Braves in 21 were nothing until September of that year. So... feed me all of the historical stats about former and previous World Series winners. I'll consume them all.
It's also the first Phillies team since 1977 to have 3 months with 18 wins.
Really?
Well, which is crazy.
Like, not even the 11 team.
So I looked it up. 11, like they just went like 17-10 every month.
Nice.
Like they just won between 16-17 games like every month. They never really had like a downturn, which you kind of need a team like this. Like if you were to do that. To kind of have, you know, a downturn like they did in April and July, and then you kind of pick things back up in May, June, and August. But it's kind of weird, like just how when this team has been good, they've been really, really, really good, and when they've been bad, they've been borderline unwatchable.
Well, yeah, you just for 1 month in October, can we just have one of those months, just one of the good months? Let's not do a bad month. But yeah, highs are high, lows are low. That's Phil's baseball.
That's how it is. Last one, Bryce Harper's OBP in August was 496, which was the highest for a Phillies batter since Jason Wirth in August of 2007. I don't think we talk about August 2000 Jason Wirth, maybe ever, because that was his first time ever as like a full-time player for the Phillies. Like he'd missed a month earlier with a wrist injury. His batting average at the time when he got hurt with the Phillies was like 235. It was 326 by that month of August. Like he raised his batting average by 90 points. He hit 414, had an 1109 OPS, 19 RBIs, 14 walks.
I don't remember that at all.
Me neither. But like obviously, like the story of 2007 is how amazing Utley was. Rollins won MVP. No one talks about how Jason Wirth came back from a wrist injury and played like an MVP for the month of August. Well, in his first time as an everyday player.
And came back from a wrist injury that derailed his career with the Dodgers. I mean, that was...
Right, like he missed all of 2006.
It was just like the... like Curry's ankles, like Steph Curry's ankles before, you know, he figured that whole thing out. And without modern technology, who knows if Curry, like if Curry played in the 80s, who knows if he's able to have the career that he has. But yes, I do not remember August of 2007, Jason Worth at all. I do remember that was the year that he stole second and third base against the Mets. I remember that one.
Yep.
That was special, but I've maintained that. Well, and then it's funny. He does that and they still go out and sign Jeff Jenkins that offseason.
Well, that was the other thing I thought was funny. I was like, wow, he played really well. And then they still signed Jeff Jenkins, and it still took until like July of that year for Charlie Manuel to finally say like, I think he's going to be an everyday player now.
Yeah. And then 3 years later, he's signing a $125 million deal. Yeah. Jason Worth is, everyone talks about Rollins, Utley Howard, rightfully so. But with him and Chooch and Victorino, like those guys are now. Chooch isn't a superstar, and Victorino
was in 2012.
He was
Adderall Chooch.
Adderall Chooch. But like Victorino and Worth are just like they're not on the level of Utley, Rollins, and Howard, but they're pretty dang close. Worth more than Victorino for me, but Victorino obviously a great player. So the depth of that team was just crazy, and the further and further you get away from it, the more and more you appreciate how truly great the 08 team was.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable the depth they had in that. Like, you look at his numbers, like, oh, he had a 130 OPS plus in 2009, hitting six on that team. Like, he should be hitting two or three.
I know. Who knows in modern days where he would have hit, but regardless, J-Dub was the best. All right, Tucker. Well, thanks for sitting in for old Seltzer. He said he's going to be back on Monday, so...
I hope so.
I guess we'll be back on Monday. But Tucker, great job as always for sitting in for James. And it's a big series. Go out there, take care of business. I would hate a split. But we live with the split. Would love 3 of 4. If they lose 3 of 4, panic in the streets and everything you've done from this point from on that West Coast trip, off not, and no one cares about the 9-game winning streak at all. So no pressure. But go out there and take care of business. Hopefully, a nice little playoff atmosphere down at CBP. I like a late, early September. You start getting the red October juices flowing. That's what this weekend feels like, Tucker.
Yeah, and he's going to cool off a little bit, too. It'll be comfortable down there.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, enjoy the Braves series, hopefully. And we'll be back on Monday or Tuesday, reacting to it all. So for Tucker Bagley and Jack Fritz, this has been another edition of the High Hopes Podcast.